Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Senate Education for this afternoon. We are going to start off with a roll call.
Vice Chair Temple?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClafferty?
Here.
Senator Emmerich?
Here.
Senator Fitzpatrick?
He's excused.
Senator Fuller?
Here.
Senator Hertz?
He's excused.
Senator O'Brien?
Excused.
Senator Olson?
Here.
Senator Regeer?
Here.
Senator Weber?
Excused.
Chairman Solomon?
Yep. Okay, everyone. We have the pleasure of having a couple of hearings, and we're going to start off with those. And Beans, I know the chairman, we're going to run both hearings at the same time simultaneously because we might as well ask questions of these guys at the same time. So I will turn it over to Russ and...
This will open Senate Resolution 51 and Senate Resolution 32.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, or Vice Chairman, thank you. Senator Dan Solomonson, District 47, last name S-A-L-O-M-O-N. We have a couple of hearings, and we're going to run them simultaneously. And we have two members that we're going to put in front of you folks for consideration this afternoon. First will be Jeff Southworth from Lewistown, Montana. And the second one is Norris Blossom from Bozeman, Montana. And I'll turn over to Lieutenant Governor.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Lieutenant Governor Kristen Juras, J-U-R-A-S, on behalf of the governor, in support of the confirmation of Mr. Jeff Southworth and Mr. Norris Blossom to the Board of Regents. As you know, the Board of Regents is a constitutionally created board that has the authority over the operations of the Montana University System. Six members serve staggered terms of 7 years. May I pass out a map, please, Mr. Chair?
Please do.
No more than four of the members may come from either District 1, which is basically Western Montana, or District 2, Eastern Montana, and no more than four may be affiliated with the same political party. The seventh, that also the ex officio members are the governor, the superintendent of public instruction, and the commissioner. The seventh member is a student who serves a one-year term, and the student is nominated by other students for the governor's consideration. A Lewistown native, Mr. Southworth, serves on the Lewistown Public School Board as a trustee. He attended Montana State University before beginning his career at Allied Steel, where he currently serves as president and co-owner. Allied Steel manufactures structural steel for malls, schools, and all other types of structures across the United States. With approximately 190 employees, Mr. Southworth understands the importance of apprenticeships and trade training in Montana. Norris Blossom, the student regent, is a senior at Montana State University. He formerly served as a senate with the university and as president of the student body. We do request your support in confirming both of these nominees. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you for introducing me, Lieutenant Governor Juras. It was an honor to have you do that. I'd also like to thank Governor Gianforte for entrusting me with this appointment. A little bit about myself. I was born in Montana in 1976.
Would you like to spell your name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Jeff, J-E-F-F, last name Southworth, S-O-U-T-H-W-O-R-T-H. Apologies. Anyway, 46 years old, born in 1976. I am proud to say that, my family is six generations in Lewistown. We've been there spanning over 130 years. I graduated from Fergus High School in Lewistown, where I went to MSU Billings for 2 years, and then transferred to Bozeman for a year and a half. And, that's maybe a distinction with me with lots of other regions. I don't have a degree. And I just think that that's important to be honest and share that with you. My wife, 24 years on Monday, and I became pregnant, and I went home. I started welding for $9 an hour, and 24 years later, I'm here today looking at you. I'm very proud of my roots and my, you know, my love for the trades, my love for building. My drug of choice is the creation of opportunity, and I love watching my employees and people that depend on me thrive. I had my sister run a stat just that I would share with you, just to try to give you a little bit of context about kind of things that have really mattered to me and what we've been able to build. Our average employee at Allied Steel, their package burdened, fully burdened with benefits, is a few hundred dollars, under $95,000 a year in Lewistown, Montana. I believe that that's a big part of our success, was our ability to train, to recruit, to empower our people. And we are a highly sophisticated builder. We are as highly certified in our trade of certifications that you can achieve. Our markets are Hawaii, Alaska, Oregon, Washington, and Montana primarily. The Montana market probably makes up about 15% of our volume. I'm also proud of the fact that we export, you know, the other 85% of money from out of state, or we export our product out of state, import the money back into Montana. I also own four other businesses. So I love, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. It's driven me. And maybe one thing that I don't really ever talk about, but I just feel is important to share with you. I'm currently the chapter executive for Big Sky YPO. I don't ever talk about YPO. I don't know if any of you know what YPO is, but it would be 45 of the, you know, leading CEOs in the state of Montana. They're my friends. They're my peers. They're my confidants. I have mentors there. We learn from each other. It's you start there, and you're a taker, and you mature there, and you're a giver. Uniquely positioned for my region's chair is I have a direct pulse on the private sector in Montana. I understand the needs of today as I will understand the needs of tomorrow. Anyways, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Southworth. We probably at this time, Mr. Blossom.
Thanks so much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, really honored to be here today. Thank you so much for having me in. Lieutenant Governor Juris, many thanks for the warm welcome. My name is Norris Blossom, N-O-R-R-I-S. Blossom is B-L-O-S-S-O-M. I am super honored to have the governor's appointment for the student regent position. I grew up here in Helena, Montana, where I attended C.R. Anderson Middle School and then Capitol High School. While I was growing up here in Helena, I saw a lot of my peers going to the Montana University system and saw the incredible education that they were getting right here in Montana, and then saw folks coming out of the university system and serving the communities that I was a part of. And so from a young age, I've really been invested in the university system and seen the value that it has provided to our whole state, which obviously led me to stay here in Montana for my college education, studying industrial engineering at Montana State University, something that I've been really grateful for and have just had an amazing experience doing. While I've been at Montana State University, outside of my direct curricular academics, I've been involved in a few extracurriculars. I served as a research assistant in the economics department at MSU, where I researched state policies across the United States and the outcomes for folks in our country. After that, I served as an ambassador for the Honors College, kind of providing tours to prospective students, and I like to think that I've brought a couple smiling faces into the Bobcat family from that experience. Following that, I was really passionate and just fell in love with the community of Montana State University and ran for student body president. In that role, really got to know our university system more and what just had an amazing experience giving back to our community, and that really led me to wanting to give back at another level and apply to, and again, I'm really overjoyed to have the appointment from the governor to this student regent position. This year, serving on the board, I've been so impressed by my fellow board members and by the partnerships that we have in industry partners across the state and in you here at the legislature and in the executive branch. I think that to me has been one of the most remarkable things, is how well we've all been able to work together. So very grateful for that. And I'm once again really thankful for y'all having me here today. So with that, I'll hand it back to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Blossom. Proponents?
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Clayton Christian, C-H-R-S-T-I-N. I have the pleasure to serve as Montana's Commissioner of Higher Education. I also am an ex officio member of the board, and I would like to rise in support of these nominations. I've been part of this board for 17 years now, I believe, and I can tell you these are some incredibly high caliber, highly capable individuals that Governor Gianforte has brought forward. I think you heard from Mr. Regent Southworth, the background that he brings really is quite unique. We've had a number of different individuals on the board over the years, but that perspective, what he can add to conversations around two-year education, CTE, workforce development, just incredibly helpful. And Regent Blossom is just a bright, energetic student that brings that student perspective to every conversation that we have. And I just couldn't speak more highly of these two nominations, and I would urge support from this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Christians.
Good morning, Vice Chair Temple and committee members. My name is Maggie Bell, B-E-L-L, and I'm with the Montana Associated Students, and we echo all of the previous sentiments in that we wholeheartedly support the nomination of both Norris Blossom and Jeff Southworth. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bell. More proponents?
Good afternoon, Chair Temple and committee members. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak on behalf of these two fantastic candidates. Todd Buchanan, serve on the Board of Regents, last name B-U-C-H-A-N-A-N. Just echoing a lot of the things, I look back to when Governor Gianforte launched his first campaign for governor and asked me to introduce the campaign, and with enthusiasm I did, because I trusted that when it comes to making these important appointments, he would find the state's most competent business people, leaders, and community leaders. And, you know, specifically to Mr. Southworth, you think about the region he's been asked to represent, a very rural part of Montana, a good two-thirds of the chunk of the state that he's the lone representative serving, and he brings a really strong rural and conservative voice to the table. As you may know, both of these gentlemen have been serving since their appointments last year and have really been fantastic contributors. One of the unique perspectives that I think Regent Southworth brings is his construction background. He's been an incredible fiscal and expense hawk as we look into construction projects, a must-needed attribute of our board. Something I'm really proud of him for. You know, again, his focus on trades, as articulated before, something that we know through our work over this last year on the Constitutional Authority Group. Many of you were a part of that. Nice to see you, Ms. McClaffrey. Certainly a priority we need to elevate, the CTE focus in our state, and I think that Regent Southworth is uniquely positioned to help us to continue that. And Regent Blossom, as a student, Commissioner Christian said it perfect, the enthusiasm and the clear handle of what the student body is trying to articulate as far as pressure points, what we need to do to continue to innovate and bring the first-class education that the residents of the state of Montana deserve has not been lost with his opportunity. He's been a constant advocate. Thank you for the opportunity. Strongly encourage you to consider both of these with a positive confirmation. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Buchanan. Any other proponents in the room? Proponents? Proponents online? Tyson?
Hi, Mr. Chair. There are no hands raised online.
Okay. Do we have any opponents? No opponents? No opponents online? Informational witnesses. Seeing none, do we have any questions from the senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to have a question for Mr. Southway, please. See if you studied all night. No. By the way, just as a side, you have something in common with Rush Limbaugh, but I'll let you figure out what it is. Mr. Chair, Mr. Southwaite, I would be interested if you would outline your view on the role of the correct relationship between the legislature and the Board of Regents.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, Senator Fuller, I believe that in a lot of ways that we are a strategic arrow in your quiver. I mean, our authority is to manage the MUS, but we heavily rely on the relationship for, you know, for appropriations, audit authority, and law. I think it's a key relationship, and I think that it's one that has allowed the MUS to flourish.
Follow up.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Mr. Chair, Mr. Southwaite, thank you. Would you please outline what your contribution will be to the goals of the university system?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Fuller. Yeah, absolutely. So when I first came into this, I knew that it was big, and I knew there's lots of feet that I could potentially step on by just kind of, you know, bumbling and running at this super hard. I have seen some daylight that I feel that is good space for me to move into. The first thing that I'm really excited to tackle, and you know, I was doing it today before we came here and these conversations have started, is that I believe that there are some blind spots that exist right now between K-12 and higher ed. You know, I talked to Superintendent Arntzen today about one thing that she wants to pilot in Lewistown that I will help her with. I think that, you know, I don't want to make this a long answer, but it really is to me this. There, I could talk for a long time about a lot of this stuff, but I think that when you're 18 years old, for many of our youth, you throw a dart, and I think that for many of our youth, you know, we saw today in a study on the perceptions of higher ed, our median and upper class income earners in our state deem our system as incredibly affordable, or too affordable, with, you know, our sister states in our region, where our low income earners look at us as cost prohibitive. We left $9 million of FAFSA money, federal grant, on the table this year. Partly because there's blinders where we can't see what's coming to us as a system, and there's HIPAA and the conversation's complicated, but there is an elegant, non-evasive way to share data, and it's one of our shared policy goals for 2023. To be able to help and access those youth. I have other ideas there as well to help voluntarily with. I would love to see some voluntary aptitude testing in our CTE programs and our shop classes. I liken this to an analogy that you'll never hear someone say, "I hate golf, I'm really good at it." People's minds tend to gravitate to what they're good at, their skill sets. They, you know, it's human nature. You do what you're good at. And for a lot of our youth, they don't know what they're good at, and they don't know where the responsibilities are. Another big thing that I'm highly focused on is changing how the private sector participates in sponsoring our youth. I'll give you an example. Right now, I have full ride scholarships for growing my Generation 3 at UM Western, one at MSU, two at Gallatin, and two at Northern. And it's strategic. The days of putting ads in the paper and getting the people that you want, that ship has sailed. We're entering into an era as Montanans where it's a grow your own program. And the investment into our youth is a very small investment when you look at the years of what we can get as corporate in our corporations and how these people can thrive by these employers that understand the value of the human capital that's coming across. One other thing that I would like to do is I would like to see a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit sprinkled in the learning, you know, on the two-year and community college side. Some of our curriculum is not cost prohibitive. To one day be able to have the dream and the vision of being self-employed, to own your own business, to control your own destiny. And I think that where we have to be careful with the private partnerships is a lot of times that we get really good at cranking curriculum and funneling youth to go work for giant corporations and everything else. And there are so many opportunities out there for people to be independent operators and to aspire. You know, I'm living proof of that. I learned that from my dad. I had that kind of mentorship. And I just think that some economics and some, you know, you sprinkle it in. I mean, you have to sprinkle it in early, right? When the brain hears it and you start thinking about these ideas, that's dreaming, that's wanting, and that's powerful and it's important. And when they learn to think about wanting and dreaming with some entrepreneurial background, this is how this kind in this sector scales and this is what this kind of stuff costs. And maybe not for all of them, but surely for a lot of them, I think that we unleash some real potential into our youth. I could go a long time. That's some of it. I think about this. It's a really, the 2 year in community college, the 1 year certs, it's a really natural lane for me to start into. I'm not awesome at our PhD programs, and I can't stand here today and recite all of the important things that are going on in our research and, you know how that's funded. And I know we have two R1 research institutions, but I have a 7 year journey if you confirm me, and I promise you I will be an expert there too. But right now I'm just I'm stoked to have the opportunity to help lead our 2 year in community college. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I redirect a question?
Absolutely.
To Mr. Blossom. Mr. Blossom, I'd like for you to offer your view as to what rights students possess and maybe what rights they don't possess on campus.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fuller, thank you for the question. Certainly, students on college campuses possess many, virtually all of the rights they possess out in the state of Montana. Within those, obviously, students have the right to understand where I think one thing that we continue to improve on is to ensure that students have the right to understand their rights and that we are communicating those to them. On university campuses, students have the right to express their opinions. Students have the right to effective education and an affordable education, and I think those are some of the main focuses that we focus on, but certainly not an exhaustive list.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, real quick, just to make sure. See, I know you didn't have me for American government in high school, so I'll cut you some slack. Can you recite for me the First Amendment rights that students enjoy or don't enjoy on campuses at Montana University System?
Certainly the freedom of Mr. Chair, Senator Fuller, thank you. Certainly the freedom of speech is absolutely a right that students enjoy on college campuses, yes.
There are only five more.
There are only
just saying. Got you some slack. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, the repeat question that I had of Mr. Southwaite, offer an outline what you think you can contribute to the goals of the Montana University System.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fuller, thank you for the question. I really hope that I can provide the student experience and the student opinion to the board. The Board of Regents is a group of very accomplished individuals, but in the nature of being very accomplished individuals, they're a little bit removed from the student experience. And so I think I've devoted the last few years of my life to understanding what students are going through and what's important to them. And so I really hope that I can be kind of the voice and advocate for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm done grilling. Thank you.
Senator Emmerich.
thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question would be for Mr. Southworth. Mr. Chair, Mr. Southworth, in regards to, cost of higher education, as we've seen with inflation and everything else that's been going on, it seems like the cost keeps going up, up, up. Well, a lot of that is tied to the fact that, inflation goes up, salaries need to go up, cost of books goes up. I mean, everything goes up. Cost of your building goes up, or buildings. So in regards to that, when you talk about saving costs and making it more affordable for individual students to actually go to university, has the board ever looked at, or have you ever looked at, actually trying to trim up some of the courses that are offered to kind of take out some of the unnecessary classes that might not be actually pursuant of the goal of that particular degree, and therefore reducing the cost of that degree for individual students, kind of making a little bit more of a lean university system rather than something that's a little bit bloated and otherwise a little less effective.
Mr. Chair, Senator Emmerich, thank you. Yes and no. I'm still a bit of a rookie, but yes, one thing that does jump out to me, just speaking as myself as a as an individual, not necessarily board discussions that we've had, is that duplication of programming, you know, across the MUS, to where maybe we have something that, say, it exists in Havre, it was piloted in Havre, and it's thriving in Havre, and then an ask for additional facilities and something else to for another startup program that you know, is down the road a ways. I do see that sometimes I question. Why would we need to duplicate certain programs in other areas and take on this cost? Why can't we allow that to thrive in the program where it's already seated? As far as like looking at curriculum offered at individual universities and understanding if it, you know, is it thriving, or is it, you know, is it a loss? To answer you honestly, I have not looked at that, but I would be happy to look at that. I would be happy to start that conversation.
Thank you. I would have a follow-up for Mr. Blossom.
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Blossom, so I suppose my question would kind of dovetail off of Senator Fuller's question in regards to rights that students enjoy on college campuses. You stated in your testimony that you said virtually they enjoy virtually the same rights on college campuses. Is virtually isn't exact, and it's usually some sort of reference to not complete, so, and not real, physical. So when we're talking about, you know, the rights that are guaranteed a person in the Montana Constitution, in the federal Constitution, is there any rights that the university system has otherwise abridged in the past, made difficult to access, or otherwise, you know, gone down that road, versus the rights that every individual enjoys outside of the campus? You see what I'm saying?
Mr. Chair and Senator Emmerich, thanks for the question. I apologize. That was I misspoke when I mentioned that earlier. Students enjoy the same rights that they enjoy outside of college campuses when they're on college campuses. And to my knowledge, it's always been the goal of the university system to ensure that that's the case.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Blossom, goals aside, that has not always happened. So when you're talking about being on the Board of Regents, that's a pretty big responsibility. And would you be able to guarantee to this committee that you would actually spearhead and ensure the rights of the students on the campus and make sure that they have access to the same rights that every individual enjoys when they walk off those campus grounds?
Mr. Chair, Senator Emmerich, absolutely. I think that, especially as the student regent, that's a huge goal of mine, is to make sure that students feel like they are, you know, enjoying the rights that they are guaranteed by our state and federal laws. And so that's absolutely something that I'll be focused on.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Regeer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. With Mr. Blossom, while you're there, probably get a little more pointed question. What are your thoughts on campus free speech zones?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rieger, you know, I think that students or anyone on college campuses should have the same First Amendment rights on and off college campuses. And so I think that as long as we maintain those rights on college campuses, that, you know, as long as those rights are maintained, that we're headed in the right direction.
Follow up. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Blossom, then there shouldn't be zones. It should the whole campus open to free speech. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Regeer, thank you for the question. You know, it would. I probably should consult with some other folks to fully like understand and dissect that question. I wouldn't want to speak for the whole board right now. You know, and just being a single member of it on that opinion. But thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Could I re-refer to Mr. Southworth's question?
Yes, please.
Mr. Southworth, sounds like your business is a successful one, and the MCA applies to your business, to your life. Does the MCA Montana Code Annotated apply to all the campuses as well? And if not, what parts don't?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rieger, I'm not an expert in Montana Code Annotated. If you could help me just pull out a specific, that would help me.
Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Southworth, I'm talking about the laws of Montana, the MCA.
Absolutely.
The laws from speed limit to taxes to what time we get up in the morning.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Rieger, absolutely, absolutely, yes. We are not above the law.
Okay, thank you.
And I...
Go ahead.
Can I take a free speech question?
Yeah, we don't have zones here.
Our policies were reviewed and they have been changed. There are no free speech zones on any of our campuses. So I just wanted to clarify.
Thank you.
Senator Olson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start with my first question for Mr. Southworth. Oh, could you give him that? And you don't have to read it, Mr. Chair, Mr. Southworth. I'm just going to ask questions that are referenced in this document. I was impressed to know that your family goes back a long time, and I think our ancestors created the University of Montana. So I'm focusing on the University of Montana, and this, what I handed you, was the charter, the enacting legislation for the University of Montana. And a couple of things that you said really harkened back, actually, to a lot of what they said, that the best investment we can make in the future of our state and in the future of our families and the future of our economy is growing our children, educating our children. And so they created the University of Montana, and they actually said that education, tuition shall ever be free to Montana students. So as you know, there's a big debate about, you know, the cost of education, and it hasn't been free for a long time. I went to school in the 80s. It wasn't free then, but it's certainly a working class family could put their children through school on a labor salary. So my question goes to, if you could expand upon this idea that you mentioned, that education truly, you do see education being cost prohibitive for the people that you see that want an education, and you're talking about growing your own programs to make sure they get that education that they need. And I guess I'm wondering if you can help us understand our responsibility as a state to do more in that area, or do you see the state? I mean, you're now taking on the regions. I know taking on a position with the regions. And it seems to me that we have to work together to figure out how to make continuing education easier. And do you have ideas about that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I do have some ideas. Most stems from companies, pilot programs, cohorts, like, you know, like our Sprint degree, like how you have the company, or if it's, you know, we even have the Billings Fire Department right now for the paramedicine stuff. How I believe that is an underserved area in not just our state, but our nation. And I feel that, Montana is going to be one of the leaders doing that. To just, you know, I think that you hear the conversation all the time, and to steal something from Governor Gianforte, I heard him once say, you know, if you talk about, I have a problem, I can't get employees, I can't, you know, and you're not willing to belly up to the table, your problem's not that acute. And I fully subscribe to that. And then there's, you know, in narrowing it in, I think that there's lots of sad examples and sad stories. And that was part of where I think we can really help, quite simply, is that I think that if we, two state entities, could share data and we could see the free and reduced lunch coming out of the K-12 system, and then find a solution that is not invasive to be able to help the youth access money that's available that we are not using, and it's millions and millions of dollars that we're currently not using, we have a big victory. And other than that, I'm open to any of your suggestions, any of your ideas. It's a conversation that I like to have, but I don't have all the solutions right now, but I do think about this.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Thank you. I guess we see this problem, too. We're not just saying that people can't. We do see the complaint that there's not enough people to fill jobs or people can't get people. But we're also seeing, and this is now 8 years in business and labor, where we were regularly being asked to eliminate continuing education requirements because nobody could afford to pay for the continuing education, that we have eliminated, to save money and efficiency, we've eliminated travel for different kinds of, you know, trainings, mm-hmm. that you would have as a professional or as any kind of worker, different trainings. And that we've been asked to reduce even qualifications because people don't want to keep going to school. And it seems to me that we've made it really hard, or at least I thought I heard you say that it was cost prohibitive. And I'm just wondering, is it just the money? So if we fix that formula, that things would be better? Or do you see there being other things as well? Or is the cost prohibitive nature of education now preventing us from really expanding our access to our students' brilliance?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes, I definitely do believe that it's cost prohibitive, especially for under the, you know, the median income families in the state of Montana. I don't have that silver bullet today, but I fully subscribe to what you're saying, and I kind of come at this with, I know there are solutions, and I'm not exactly sure what they are. But again, I would like to continue to think along these same lines, because we, you know, there's lots of kids in Montana that aren't getting the opportunity or don't have availability to understand that there's a choice for them to be able to get a better education. And as far as like sacrificing credentials, no.
Well, I appreciate that. We haven't found the silver bullet either. Mr. Chair, thank you for those questions. I'll now just ask a quick question of Mr. Blossom, please.
Follow up?
No, yeah, for Mr. Mr. Chair, Mr. Blossom. So I'm going to refer to another part of this creation of the University of Montana, and I understand you went to Bozeman and you're in engineering. But we stated when we created the University of Montana that it was to impart the best to young men and women on equal terms, a liberal education and thorough knowledge of the different branches of literature, science, and the arts, and their applications. And so there was this idea that you'd get a thorough knowledge of the arts and sciences. Now, you're still a student, and I am wondering what you see. So I was fortunate, and I know that my colleague here doesn't like the long references to the past, but when I was a student, my favorite thing about college was exploring your mind, exploring, learning how to think about a lot of different things that you never thought you would ever think about. So, and so that's what the College of Arts and Sciences does. And I'm just wondering, and now this is a cost question as well, but do you see students having to choose because of the cost of education, not being able to really explore education to their fullest? Or I guess more specifically, I'm asking you, what problems do you see now that students are struggling with that we may not have struggled with in the same way because we're older? I mean, you know, we're done from the 80s, so.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, thank you for the question. I think that definitely cost is always a very serious consideration for students in the university system. That's been a real focus of the Board of Regents for the last, you know, many years, is figuring out how to combat that. One thing that I think is a barrier for students is the cost of kind of ancillary costs like textbooks. And I think that's something that I'm actually really excited that we're making a lot of progress on it in figuring out how we can make resources that effectively educate students, but in a much less cost intensive way for students. So that is one of many cost constraints for students. Absolutely.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
And do you see you had mentioned something, I think, about duplication, or maybe it was Mr. Southworth, but there is this concern of trying to cut back on the general knowledge systems of the arts and sciences that gives a base for everybody, no matter what they end up becoming later on in life. And I'm just wondering if you see how you see what's going on your campus and what problems we might need to be addressing there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I think that there are certainly a lot of opportunities for students to pursue degrees that include that base, you know, just education on how to think critically, just like you mentioned. I think that obviously we offer other types of education that probably don't focus on that as much, you know, degrees that are quicker or you know, 1-year certificates type of degrees. I guess I would think that we have a pretty good balance of allowing people to kind of customize what they're hoping to get out of it. And I think we see the results of that are people coming out of the university system with a diverse set of backgrounds that effectively cater to kind of what we need for the economy of Montana.
Well, thank you for your willingness to serve, and you too, Mr. Southworth. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Regeer, I think you have one more question.
One more question, yeah, for Mr. Southworth. And Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Southworth, kind of what the discussion has been, we hear a lot about student debt, and that seems to be the solution that a lot of people have to go to school. You just borrow the money, worry about it later. What are your thoughts on helping kids avoid a lot of debt or keep from debt, and how do we do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Regeer, I think that there are programs that we have, especially on the federal side, that we are not utilizing. And again, I think that will help. You know, there are I want to be careful how I say this, because there's a lot of people that go to the 4-year institutions that take on debt and they don't finish, right? And a lot of them, I believe philosophically, that they went there because that's what you do when you graduate high school, right? To some level, it almost sometimes feels like it's a keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing. There are great career paths that I feel sometimes are hidden, especially from a lot of our K-12 schools, that I know that the private sector is sponsoring and is about to really ramp up in sponsoring, but also time to degree equals less cost to degree. And I think that giving ourselves, when I say ourselves, our state, the tools to really be able to be, to put the a la carte out correctly so it's highly visible, it's marketed correctly, and it's understood correctly, I think a lot of debt's going to get eliminated based on the simple truths of there are so many other choices in the MUS, and I think a lot of our youth that's going into the 4-year cycle could have thrived in the 2-year cycle. But I also see with our Common Core numbering, I have my son did this. He started in on a 2-year path and then transferred into the 4-year path. So it's available both ways. You don't have to go to like Gallatin and be like, oh, I just wasted 2 years. You can transfer into MSU, right? And do it without, a bunch of carnage on your transcripts. So I hope I didn't dance around that. I kind of feel like I did, but I hope that you got something out of that. Okay. I was truly.
I did a little bit.
Thank you.
Senator Emmerich. One last question, right?
Yeah, one last question, Mr. Vice Chair. Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Southworth, apologies, had a blank moment. So another thing that I've been personally thinking about, and I don't know, as a business owner, and your passion for entrepreneurship, and have you looked into to help with potentially help with cost for students, because there are a lot of students who do try to pay as they go because maybe they can't obtain enough funding through the loan process, or maybe they don't want to and they want to try and pay as they go. A lot of those students, even ones that, do obtain quite a lot of loans for these programs, they're working jobs. And a lot of times these jobs are pretty similar to the profession that they're trying to obtain. Have you looked at any type of like hybrid apprentice type program where you're bringing the community involvement, businesses involved, to where the skills that they learn on the job can translate into academic learning to therefore reduce some of the cost of a total degree in that regard, and potentially push out more experienced students that are more readily hireable by these businesses?
Mr. Chair, Senator Emmerich, thank you for that question. The answer is yes. Actually, this is something that the OCHE is working on. We talk about it. It's our prior learning assessment. So essentially, where your skills from work, you probably couldn't, work for me and then get credits for biochem. But if you stay in inside of a however wide of a sector, so it's relevant. Yes, on the job training to we are looking at transferring that into credits. And I'm not an expert on exactly where we're at with all of that right now, but I have my ears do perk up when those conversations are happening, I know that we're intentionally looking for opportunities there, and that will also help reduce the cost of education greatly.
Thank you.
Senator Hertz.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I thought I should just pipe up here. I'm absorbing all this. First, I want to thank Mr. Blossom and Mr. Southworth, excellent candidates. And Mr. Blossom, I know my 30 years of business experience have extremely helped me here at the legislature, and I suspect they'll help you at the Board of Regents, just looking at things from a different perspective. I actually predate Senator Olson at University of Montana. I was there in the late 70s, and cost is a concern. I mean, I was able to work at a sawmill that's no longer in existence in Pablo, Montana, and make about $3,500 a year in the summertime. That paid for my tuition, books, room and board. That's no longer a possibility. But there is also a lot of people that, you know, the cost is an issue. I mean, costs to universities have been rising much faster than inflation. And they've got their own set of problems. But some individuals look at controlling costs just by, let's make tuition free for everybody. So that means more taxpayer dollars. Do you see if we completely provided more subsidies to the university system, do you see that as having an impact on controlling costs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hertz, no, I worry that, that system, I think that there is a peer level to serve some percentage of the populace that wants to get educated. My worry is that that system gets taken advantage of, right? Where, say, you know, you were in business for 30 years, you make your kids pull debt, and then it gets, you know, it gets paid for. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I worry about. You know, I think that that if that got too big, I think that that's a scary, slippery slope. But I do think that there are, you know, some of our population that, you know, they didn't pick their parents, we should help them. I feel that way.
Thank you.
Mr. Southworth, I do have a question. Now, you'd mentioned that you work with some students that are trying to go to school, and you're maybe supporting them a little bit now, maybe through CTE or dual credit or whatever. So what kind of support privately do you see, maybe not yourself, but some other entities that might work toward education, career, whatever, just briefly?
Mr. Chair, yeah, thank you. I think it's going to range, but I think it's your tuition is covered, and in lots of instances, I also think that the housing component is pretty easy to pencil. If you are intentionally growing a company to succeed into the future, that capital outlay is not that big of a deal, and there are hundreds and hundreds of employers that can afford that in the state.
Thank you. One question for Mr. Blossom. So you're going to school right now. I assume you're going to stay in Montana, but if you were offered an extra $100,000 to go out of state, would you go out?
Mr. Chair, to clarify, that's is this for undergraduate?
You don't have to answer that. So thank you. Thank you both. It's been great, and I assume... I assume that Senator Solomon wants to close. Thank you both.
Great job. Mr. Vice Chair, two very qualified, energetic individuals. Mr. Southworth, his enthusiasm, especially for the one and two and year issues, the CTEs, grow your own, how we can move Montana forward, all the businesses. He brings a lot to the board that maybe not every other candidate that we've seen for the regions brings. So it's a unique perspective that I think is going to fit in very well there. And of course, Norris brings this bright, energetic, great point of view. He's representing the students. This is his life right now. And remember back, at least I can, when I was in college, best time of your life, and he gets to represent the students on the Board of Regents. I think that's a great opportunity, Mr. Vice Chair. That'll do it.
This will close the hearing on Senate Resolution 32 and Resolution 31 or 51. Thank you. We'll take just a break.
Okay, folks, we'll come back into session or order, whatever you'd like to call it. We have a couple of hearings to do now, and I think we're done shuffling people around. So we will start with House Bill, the hearing, if you will, on House Bill 91. Representative Sprunger has been waiting patiently.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. It looks like an evacuation, so hopefully all the strong minds have remained today. My name is Courtney Sprunger. That's S-P-R-U-N-G-E-R. And I'm representing the House District 7, the heart of Kalispell, which I gladly share part of with our friend Senator Fuller here up in Kalispell. I'm pleased to bring House Bill 91 because I believe that our libraries are incredibly important, perhaps now more than ever. If COVID taught us anything, it's that we need to come together and connect in person. Public libraries are one of the only remaining places in our communities that are dedicated to meet this need. We also need to be able to inform ourselves. Those who are informed are empowered to build a better life for themselves and to understand and to maintain their freedoms. Our public libraries ensure that right. Public library state aid is distributed to local public libraries and is used to help our local libraries provide customized resources that meet the needs of each unique community. The good news is this is not a new program. It was originally established in 1999. In 2013, the statutory appropriation was set at 40 cents per person per year. House Bill 91 renews this appropriation and increases it to 50 cents per person per year to address the inflation and to improve access. It will sunset in 2029. I encourage you to get things going right with a due pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Okay, we'll go with proponents. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, Chair Solomon and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Stapp, S-T-A-P-P, and I'm your state librarian. And with the permission of the chair, I have a handout.
Please do.
I want to thank Representative Sprunger for her support of this legislation and her passionate information about the influence of libraries in our communities. House Bill 91 is an agency bill brought to you with support of the governor's office. But this bill is really about funding for your libraries in your communities. Those of you who are on the Education Interim Committee and the Education Interim Budget Committee will be familiar with this legislation. We had the opportunity to visit with both of those committees during the interim. And today you will also hear from Montana librarians about the importance of this funding and their work in your communities. As Representative Sprunger said, the statutory appropriation for state aid was first passed in 2013. It was reauthorized in 2017 with a sunset in 2023. And so here we are again asking for reauthorization of this critical funding for Montana libraries. In addition, this year we are seeking to extend eligibility of this funding to accredited tribal college libraries that voluntarily offer public library services to their communities. There are currently 4 tribal college libraries in Montana that offer community library services. None of them have dedicated funding to do this work. All of that effort is currently funded with one-time only grants. The current appropriation, as Representative Sprunger said, is 40 cents per capita tied to the decennial census, and so that amount is about $433,000. And that amount is distributed to Montana libraries through a formula that's found in administrative rule. For the first time since this appropriation was created, we are asking for an increase of that appropriation to 50 cents per capita, or about $542,000. And we're asking for that increase to both address inflation within our local libraries and to ensure that libraries are not negatively impacted by the addition of tribal college libraries. The state library is here because we are responsible for administering these monies, and every penny passes through the state library's budget to your local libraries. And importantly, libraries may spend this state aid as they determine to meet the needs of their communities. These monies truly benefit your local constituents. The bill was amended in House Appropriations to require a one-to-one cash match from recipients, and I know that there is discussion about removing that amendment. We do support the removal of that amendment, practically speaking, what that amendment does, as I said, it requires a one-to-one cash match by all recipients, and that match cannot be made up with state or federal dollars. Local public libraries are already to be required to be funded by at least 70% through local revenues of their total budget. So local funding for public libraries far exceeds the one-to-one cash match. So there is no practical implication for public libraries. And the tribal college libraries have raised concerns about implications of this match on their ability to seek this funding. With that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I urge your support for House Bill 91.
Thank you very much. Any other proponents? Good afternoon, Mr. Forstag.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. Sam Forstag, FORSTAG, here on behalf of the Montana Library Association. We stand in support of House Bill 91 and thank Representative Sprugger for all of her work on this, getting us this far. When I was a kid, waiting for my mom to wrap up work as a nurse until 7 o'clock, the library was a safe place that I could go, I could read, I could play RuneScape on the computer. I think I benefited, my family did, and I think public safety probably did as well. Now, when I'm on R&R from fires in the summer, my local public library is a place where I can go and do work and have an office or something like that. Libraries benefit just about every county, every community in this state in so many different ways, and this aid is a minor, modest piece that helps smaller libraries even more than the larger libraries that have more local funding to help them provide their services. We hope you'll support the continuation of this state aid and support the modest cost of living increase that this gives to make sure that libraries can keep up with the increased costs since this was first put into statute. Thank you for your time, and I am available for questions.
Thank you. Any other proponents? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today. Chair Solomon and members of the committee, my name is John Finn. That's F as in Frank, I-N-N. I am a Montana librarian and director of Lewis and Clark Library here in Helena. Lewis and Clark Library serves all of Lewis and Clark County. We have branches in Lincoln, Augusta, East Helena, and we have a bookmobile that travels all over the county. Our collections, programs, and services are a lifeblood for residents of this county. I present in support of HB 91 this afternoon. Please let me start by saying that Lewis and Clark Library is very lucky. We have very stable funding here in Lewis and Clark County due to property tax revenue and a permanent mill levy. So we have a lot of stability in our budget. We know year to year that our budget can grow as long as the county's revenues see positive gains as well. I have, however, seen the other side of Montana library life. I was formerly director at Hearst Free Library in Anaconda, and budgeting at a small library like that is a struggle, and knowing that we had state aid available to us was a relief for a lot of small libraries. If you're planning a summer program and your budget numbers come in lower than you expected, you can always count on that state aid. And so while it's not super important to Lewis and Clark Library, I do understand that smaller libraries really rely on the state aid. So I would ask you please support the state aid package that was presented. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Other proponents?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Tal Golden, T-A-L-G-O-L-D-I-N. I'm here as a private citizen. You'll hear from me in my professional capacity on the next bill, but I was compelled to stand up as the parent of two young kids, ages 6 and 8. They spend a lot of time in front of screens, and I will tell you that one of the last places of true wonder they have is going to a public library. They are students here in Helena, and they came home raving about the bookmobile. They were excited all summer when it was coming, and it truly was amazing to see them grow, to see them go to the library and check out books that they're interested in, and I'll tell you, it has impacted their reading scores and their development immensely. So I urge you to pass on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bryson. That's B-R-Y-S-O-N, and I'm going to practice talking slower. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on behalf of the Montana Association of Counties, we too support this continuation request for a couple different reasons. One, libraries are really important for our communities. And number two, if you've ever gotten a fight with a librarian, you'll realize that most often you lose. And so when they ask for support, I'm here at the podium supporting them for those two very good reasons. We encourage you to do the same. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good to know. Other proponents? Any in the room? Seeing none. Anthony, do we have any proponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The first proponent is Alyssa.
Thank you. Alyssa, can you unmute yourself? There we go.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alyssa Wolentes, that's W-O-L-E-N-E-T-Z, and I'm here in support of House Bill 91. So I'm the director of the Lewistown Public Library here on behalf of the Montana Library Association, but my first library card was from Ekalaka, a town of about 350 people in the southeastern corner of the state. I owe a great deal to the Ekalaka Public Library. My love for learning had its foundation in the books and the library programs available in my hometown and in the way my family engaged in those. And later, those foundations led me to Stanford University in Japan and then back here to Lewistown. So I think all libraries strive to provide the sort of lifelong learning opportunities that can make a difference to people, whether they're kids in Ekalaka or adults in Lewistown, and state aid helps us do that. Different communities rely on it for different things. In Ekalaka, it funds the Montana Library to Go, a digital service that provides 24/7 access to ebooks and audiobooks to people like my brothers, who farm and ranch 20 miles out of town. In Lewistown, it helps us stretch our services beyond the nuts and bolts provided by our local budget by allowing us to be creative and expansive with our programming. One of the ways we use state aid is to invest in the resources our youth services librarian uses to plan story times. She takes into account current research, high-quality trainings, and collaborations with other libraries to tailor each of her story times to the developmental needs of specific age ranges. This helps her help children and families do a lot of things. It translates to kids building strong relationships to the people who bring them to story time, to their families. Kids who gain a lifelong love of reading like I did, and kids who come into kindergarten with the kinds of skills and confidence they need to succeed in school and their personal lives. And all of these things help us set kids up with strong foundations, which is particularly relevant right now when over half of Montana's students are not reading at grade level. Another need that high quality professional programming and resources meets here is the need for pre-kindergarten options. Currently, there is a local shortage of education programs and childcare for ages 0 to 5. The library helps fill that gap by providing free, high-quality programming to children and families to support them during this key time for cognitive and social development. Our goal is to give them the best possible resources to build the sort of core skills that can benefit them for an entire lifetime. I sincerely hope you'll continue to invest in the futures of local communities, especially rural communities, by reauthorizing this funding for local libraries and the people we serve. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for testifying. Anthony, is there any others?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have Susie.
Okay. Ms. McIntyre?
Hello, my name is Susie McIntyre, S-U-S-I-E, McIntyre, M-C-I-N-T-Y-R-E, and I am the library director at the Great Falls Public Library. I was born and raised in Great Falls and spent my childhood coming here and checking out books. And now as library director, we are one of those libraries that John Finn spoke about that really struggle for funding. And we barely are able to meet the needs of our community. And without state aid, things would be much worse for us. The $30,000-ish dollars that we get from the per capita in our last budget allowed us to continue to run our bookmobile with prices going up and to continue our early literacy services and maintain our technology. That small amount of funding is something that is really essential to have libraries continue to function. It helps us ensure that libraries across the state of Montana are able to function. And they're very essential for all of our community members. And I hope that you pass this not only to keep public libraries going, but to allow tribal libraries to continue to serve as needed. So thank you very much, and I urge support of HB 91.
Thank you, Ms. McIntyre. Anybody else, Anthony?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have Joy.
Ms. Bridwell?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name, members of the committee, my name is Joy Bridwell. That's B-R-I-D-W-E-L-L. I am the library director at the Stonechild College Rocky Boy Community Library, located on the Rocky Boy Indian Reservation. I have worked at the library for 14 years. My library serves as an academic and community library that also houses a tribal archive. My library is completely run on grant funding and donations. We do not receive funding from our tribe or from the state. The library does community programming through a grant from IMLS. We hold 12 community events a year. Six of these events are cultural, in which we incorporate our Cree language, history, and culture into each event. The other six events are general events, such as Halloween, Christmas, or our annual game night. We also hold 5 one-day-long cultural workshops that are taught by our local artists. These workshops include beginner's beading, moss bag making, bread making, dry meat making, and ribbon skirts. Every July, we hold our annual summer reading program. When the pandemic hit the reservation and shut down everything, my library stayed open. We continued our community programming by turning our in-person events into kits that families could take home. Over the 2.5 years that the library was closed to the community, we handed out over 2,800 kits. My library receives very little funding for collection development from our grant. It would be very helpful to receive consistent funding for our tribal libraries that do community programming. The 7 tribal libraries in Montana compete against each other for funding from IMLS. This funding would be very helpful because it would mean that my library would have funding for collection development and for a summer reading program. With the rising cost of databases and periodicals, it means that I must lower the amount I request for my community programming or cut it out entirely. An example of this is we had to cut the funding for our summer reading program to guarantee that we had funding for our databases. We are the only library within the reservation that provides community programming, and this funding would be beneficial for our community. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much. Okay, Anthony, is there any others?
Mr. Chair, there are no more proponents.
Okay, we'll ask one more time. Any more proponents in the room? Seeing none, do we have any opponents? I'm guessing none. Anthony, I don't believe we have any more online, do we?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Thank you, Anthony. So, information of witnesses. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Solomon and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tracy Cook, COOK. I'm the lead consulting and learning librarian at the Montana State Library, and I stand by for any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. Senator Olson.
Thank you. I could ask anybody this question, but I guess I'll try Mr. Finn.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Finn, my question goes directly to the uses of computers, but I want to, I've heard recently of students creating Luddite groups in which they're going back to reading books. And I know that we all think of libraries as full of great books, tons and tons of books. But I also know that as a member of the legislature, we continually push and actually sometimes mandate the use of computers to access certain services and to learn about things and to find out what, you know, even public notices are now sometimes only being on the computer. So can you tell me what you've seen over time about how much people are using computers in your libraries as a community service that the library provides.
The Luddites are there. They're an interesting group of folks. We have a lot of book clubs, physical book clubs, including teen book clubs, that they bring their hard copy books to the library. But as far as public computer use at the library, we just did a major remodel, $6 million project. And our computer, the number of our public computers did not increase. So you might think that we would expand space and put more computers to use. But we have laptops that we check out that people take home or they can take anywhere in the library. So our actual public computer space didn't grow, but the number of computers that we have access to has grown a little bit. But I would say that computer use in public libraries is a big thing, of course. I mean, you're right. People come in to do their taxes, file Social Security claims. All of that stuff is online. And if somebody doesn't have a computer at home, we are their best spot.
Thank you, Mr. Finn.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got one, Ms. Stapp. I'll bring you up a little bit on the fiscal note. So,
Chair Solomon.
Rough numbers, it's about 110,000 increase, and it shows it as 542,000, but basically up until, because it sunsets this year, it is showing the increase as the five whatever, but it's realistically 110,000, give or take.
Chair Solomon, you're exactly right. There's a sunset on the statutory appropriation, so the full dollar amount in essence drops off the general fund. That's why you see the full amount, but compared to this current fiscal year, it's an increase of just shy of $110,000,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
And Ms. Stepp, the other question is, we're bringing in four tribal libraries. How much roughly would that number be?
Chair Solomon, looking at the formula that determines how much libraries each receive, we estimate that the tribal college libraries would each receive somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000.
So we're probably talking six grand, give or take. Okay. I'm
Mr.
just,
Chair.
If somebody asks, I want to be able to answer that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Olson.
I guess I'll ask Ms. Stapp.
Ms. Stapp, yeah.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Stapp, I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about the amendment. I agree that I feel like we're already asking our librarians to provide a huge service, and I certainly don't want them to have to be holding bake sales when they're providing all these other services to the public. Can you describe the hardship that this would put, and wouldn't we need more money for librarians if we're going to ask them to raise money as well as provide the services?
Chair Solomon, Senator Olson, thank you for the question. As I said, public libraries, your libraries that are funded by a city or a county or a city-county library, already meet that requirement. Local public libraries' funding right now averages about 95% from their local revenue. That totals about $32 million. So we far exceed the requirement that's in this amendment. The challenge comes for those tribal college libraries specifically because of the requirement that they not use state and federal funds. They don't have the opportunities to generate revenue the way a local government generates revenue. And so there isn't the opportunity for them to have other sources of funds to meet that one-to-one match. That's the extent of my familiarity with the amendment. I would encourage you to perhaps ask Joy a follow-up question if you wanted more details from a tribal perspective, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Good enough?
Oh, I guess we should follow up with Joy. Or with what's the name? Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I'm very bad. With
Bridwell.
Ms. Birdwell.
Ms. Bridwell? Anthony, can we see if we can get Ms. Bridwell back?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Solomon.
Ms. Bridwell, Senator Olson.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Bridwell, I guess I'm trying to address the complications created by this amendment. It seems like we are adding tribal college librarians or libraries, but my understanding is, and this is what I'm asking you to confirm, that if we actually leave this House amendment on, that effectively may eliminate your ability to participate in the system. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, ma'am. I have sat down with our college president, Corey Sangre-Billy, and discussed this with her. We've been doing community events, being that we are located on the reservation, for over 15 years now. When I stepped in, they had just started this program of doing community events. And she fully supports the amendment. She said that they would definitely find the money somehow, not touching any federal funding, state funding, to do it. They would find the funding somewhere in the college's budget to meet the match.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bridwell.
Thank you, Mr. Good enough. Chair.
I'm gonna ask the sponsor to step forward for a second, and we're gonna kind of ask her the same type of question on the amendment. Has it got put on your bill? Do you have a thought?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have all kinds of thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. So thank you for the opportunity. First of all, I think it's wonderful to hear from our friends at the tribal libraries. I love the spirit of can-do. I think that is something that's unique to Montanans, right? Which is to say that when faced with a challenge, we can do this. Now, I think that we may be asking something of them that we are not asking of the other participants in these programs. And I think that we need to consider as we look at this that it may not be the best use of their time and resources. And I certainly leave that to this committee. It was an amendment that I think that we felt was necessary to continue to move this bill forward. And seeing as how we wanted to make sure that the 82 communities did not lose out on this opportunity, I think it's well worth the committee's consideration.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Amridge.
Mr. Chair, Senator Amridge.
Thank you. My first question would be for Ms. Bridwell.
Ms. Bridwell, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Senator Amridge.
Ms. Bridwell, so this bill is asking us to attach tribal college libraries and basically transform them into the definition for a public library. And so my question would be, as a tribal library, assuming you run the tribal library for the most part, is
That's
that correct?
I'm the director.
As the director, is there any part of the tribal library that is not accessible by the public, you know, any services that are not accessible by the public, books, or anything that is not accessible by the public in your tribal college library?
No, everything is accessible to all patrons.
Thank you. My next question would be follow-up for Ms. Stapp.
Ms. Stapp, please.
Ms. Stapp, Mr. Chair, my question would be, so when it comes to the definition of a public library, there's some pretty specific criteria in the MCA where it's got to have public support to create the library. It's got to have a board of trustees, you know, in regards to, you know, state or local and county. Why do the tribal libraries not meet this definition in this regard? And can the tribes actually create a library on tribal land through the same mechanisms that would be considered a public library?
Chair Solomon, Senator Emmerich, I'm not sure that I can speak to the process through which a tribal council or a tribal an entity could create a tribal library. What exists in Montana are tribal college libraries. What I can also tell you is that within Montana code, there are legal means through which a city or a county can create a public library.
and the current statutory appropriation that you're looking at specifically refers to those pieces of code that establish those public libraries. By adding the amendment that we've added, we're simply recognizing the fact that tribal college libraries provide public library services. So we're not changing the legal process through which a tribe might create a public library. We're simply extending that eligibility to accredited tribal colleges.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So in regards to, you know, we're essentially giving these libraries a free pass on the requirements that all other libraries have to adhere to, simply because they're providing public services, which I can appreciate that, but the what concerns me is that when we do this, we're creating a carve out for these tribal libraries that weren't created by the public at large, which is the requirement for a public library in the first place. And then on top of that, and maybe you could speak to this as far as like a board of trustees that all of their libraries, you know, have to, you know, be run by, and are tribal libraries run by a board of trustees? I mean, what's the difference and the distinction there?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Emmerich, thank you for that good question and the opportunity to clarify. In addition to the statutory language that establishes libraries, in order to be eligible for this funding, libraries have to meet Montana's public library standards that are found in administrative rule. And the state library undertook a process starting in 2019 to modernize those standards. We did so with an eye to making sure that tribal college libraries could be eligible under those public library standards. We had a member of a tribal college library participate on the task force that helped us write those standards. And any tribal college library that receives this fund would have to meet those standards as written, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
One more.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Ms. Stapp, in regards to the standards that are in administrative rule, those were written to accommodate tribal libraries, and why weren't tribal libraries, why didn't they try to meet the standards, and why did we have to change the standards to meet them? I suppose that would be kind of the question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Emmerich, we didn't looked to try to accommodate tribal libraries, but looked to make sure that the language that exists within administrative rules didn't automatically create a barrier to exclude them. So, for example, in administrative rule, to your question about a board, that requirement is also in administrative rule, and the tribal college libraries have councils within their tribal colleges that serve that role for those tribal colleges.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Good? Everybody good? Lay it on us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be back up here. As you can see, I really like staying up here. That's why I was trying to take your question, but I'm glad that you've re-referred. You know what? So what I want to say today is, you know, reading changed my life from a really early age. I fell in love with the Walter Farley series when I was 9 or 10 years old, and I read my way through that series over the course of the next several years. And the reality is, you know, they say readers are leaders, right? But the reality is my dad was a public school teacher. He was an English teacher, so that impacted my love of learning. But we did not have the money, functionally, to support my insatiable love of learning. And so libraries made a huge difference for our families. And I can say that that love of learning drove me through every piece of my education and through my career, and the reason why I'm standing before you today. I think that as we look at our kids and we consider how they're learning today, we need to ask ourselves if we want them to continue to learn at the hands of TikTok and Xbox, or if we want them to have access to public libraries. I'd ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Okay, that will end the hearing, and I appreciate the representative. It's an hour and a half from when you got here. I appreciate you hanging with us. And do you have
Transportation Committee.
No, do you have somebody who wants to take this?
Oh,
Well, don't all jump in at once.
Oh, I'd love to, but you should do it.
No, well.
Whoever the committee chooses.
Okay. We'll get it done. Thank you. Okay, that will end that hearing. Give us a second to shuffle around. Wow. Get ready. We will have House Bill 334, and the sponsor representative is here, and
yep.
Thank right you for coming.
Absolutely. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Representative Lori Bishop, that's B-I-S-H-O-P, from House District 60, which is Livingston and its immediate surrounds. And I bring you a rather simple bill today, which is House Bill 334. And even as recently as this morning on my drive to the Capitol, I heard yet another story about the mental health needs of our youth, and in particularly in the education setting, what a challenging time this has been. And certainly as we reflect on that, we know that a part of the story that we're facing right now is in the aftermath of coming out of the pandemic, but even before that, we had plenty of data to show that in our state that kids were suffering and struggling with their mental health. And while we contemplate lots of different strategies, this story in particular ended right where this bill picks up, which is to say that one of the best things that we can do to help kids meet those needs over time is to destigmatize mental health and mental health needs. And while we talk about a lot of different potential solutions in this building, many of them are complicated and expensive. This is simple and free, and just one step that we can take. So bringing your attention to the bill, this bill would add mental health needs to the short list of allowable reasons for an absence from K-12 schools. That's what this bill would do. What this bill would also do is it would maintain local control for school boards to set their attendance policies just in the same way that they do now. And it would also uphold parental rights to make a choice about when it's right for them to keep their children out of school and under what terms they would do that. So it maintains local control, parental rights. But it importantly destigmatizes mental health needs for students. And I, as a parent of three kids who are now out of the K-12 system, I can speak of my own experiences to days that you know that your kid needs to not be in school. And when it is in regards to their mental health, we often sort of hide the ball, right? We, you know, in our family, we'd call that your mental health day, and we would, that's not what we would say to the school. And we did so in a conversation that sort of alluded to the idea that if we did say that to the school, it wouldn't be okay. This makes it okay. And it still maintains the ability for the school to be able to address whatever that is. So if they're seeing an abundance of mental health days, that parents calling in and openly saying that it's a mental health need, it can be a flag if that student hasn't otherwise been flagged, that maybe there are some additional resources that the school could provide. But it also just opens that dialogue and keeps it an open dialogue so that no one feels as though they cannot be open about that. That is what it does. It's a simple, simple, simple solution. I don't know if we'll have anybody that comes in today. I know I can just share with you that this has been run by all the school people and no one had any heartache with it. And also, NAMI has supported this bill in the past, and it is one of NAMI's national strategies that can support youth and their mental health needs. So with that, I will sit down in case there's anybody that wants to chime in, but happy to answer questions as well.
Okay, thank you, Representative. We'll start out with proponents. You're going to fight over this? Who gets to be first?
Rock, paper, scissors. There were some people doing rock, paper, scissors over my mind.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Colleen Rahn. The last name is spelled R-A-H-N. And I'm representing NAMI Montana. NAMI Montana is a grassroots organization, and what we do is we educate, support, and advocate people with mental illness and their families. And this bill is, like you said, it's like pretty simple, but it's just necessary, and it's our reality. Our kids right now in school, they need a mental health day, and they need to feel comfortable saying that that's what they need. So I rise in support. Thank you.
Okay. Was it Mr. Golden? I'm trying to remember.
That's right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. So now in my professional capacity, for the record, my name is Tall Golden, T like Tom, A-L-G-O-L-D-I-N. And I am the supervising attorney for Education, Benefits, and Employment at Disability Rights Montana. Disability Rights Montana is the state's federally mandated protection and advocacy system. Our mission is to protect and advocate for the civil, human, and legal rights of persons with disabilities across Montana. Our work extends across the state to some 250,000 adults with disabilities and 21,000 school-aged youth with disabilities. Our education unit advocates for the rights of children and youth with disabilities to receive a free, appropriate public education without discrimination in Montana's K-12 schools, so they're fully prepared to enter adult life, ready for further employment, education, and independent living. DRM supports the revisions to Section 25103, which is in this bill, to recognize the mental health needs should be a permissible absence, and that students should not be truant. So there are several benefits. One is to make sure that those kids can take time if they need to get mental health care, if they need a mental health day, if they have absences to attend therapy session, and they will not be penalized, even if those happen with some consistency, that won't be construed as truancy, and certainly that those parents won't be accused of promoting truancy. Second, it provides a mechanism to help schools identify students who may have mental health needs so those students can be appropriately served, and schools can meet their obligations under two federal laws that I'll talk about for just a moment. One is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and the second is called Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Section 504 was the first anti-discrimination law in the United States Code, and passed in 1973, and it prohibited discrimination on the basis of disability in programs that receive federal financial assistance, which all school districts do. And IDEA was the first federal law that required a substantive standard for providing special education services, what's called a free appropriate public education, or FAPE. IDEA is what creates the Individualized Education Program, or the IEP, that you may have heard of. One of the most important obligations under both IDEA and Section 504 is the obligation to what we call the child find obligation, to locate, identify, and evaluate every student who may reside within the district when the district has a reason to suspect that child may be a child with a disability qualified for services under either IDEA or Section 504. We believe that this bill gives the schools an opportunity to notice when children are having repeated absences based on mental health needs, and hopefully to raise a red flag that these children may need to be identified and evaluated for special education services or what's called a 504 plan. Most importantly, perhaps, it places mental health on par with physical disabilities, and we hope will continue the important work of destigmatizing mental illness and make sure that all of our students can get the care that they need without being afraid to speak up. With that, we urge a due pass on HB 334, and I'm available for questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other proponents? Anthony, I don't believe there's anybody online for this bill.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. We will, done with proponents, any opponents, any informational witnesses? Okay, down to questions. You guys have some? I know I had the sponsor. I told her I was going to ask this question, so. Define mental, how, a little bit back, Representative, I ask you, I'm going to ask you to define mental health needs, and so that you talked about not taking away local control, and I hate the long question, but I don't want to do that, but I want to be able to say the school can make a policy, they can say what they want to do. How do we define that? How are they going to define
that? How do they define that? Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the question. And just to address this again, this maintains local control and local policy setting around absences. And I can say just to back it up with a small amount of just background for myself, I have worked in coordination with the education community for a long time. I worked with the Office of Public Instruction for several years, and part of my work included working with school districts around their attendance policies and how they could encourage better daily attendance. So I have some of that background and have talked to districts statewide, but can speak most confidently to my own school district because I think it's a good example, which is that school districts, in the same way, if we look at the bill and looking at illness in particular, we don't define illness, right? Illness could be lots of different things. So when school districts set their policy may be around, look, you've got a certain number. So in Livingston, I think our number is 10 in a given semester. And once you hit that number, now we're starting to get into trouble. If you have not brought in any particular evidence, so like it would be a doctor's note or from a therapist or any documentation of that illness that might otherwise take some of those absences away and put it into another kind of category, now those are going to be dings against you, but we create a path that if you have some documentation that can offset those. This would maintain exactly that kind of policy if that is the kind of policy that a district has in place, but it doesn't mandate what the policy should be to define that.
Okay. That was the other question I was getting after. This doesn't mandate to the district they must do it. This is a choice they now have, which might benefit some students. Is that
correct?
Where we're both going?
I think that what it does do, Mr. Chair, if I may, while there is no mandate here, it just includes in the list of allowable absences. So if there is, mandate doesn't seem quite like the appropriate word, but to say these are allowable absences. Now, how you handle your attendance policy, that's up to the school district.
Absolutely. Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to follow up with your question with Mr. Golden, actually.
Okay. Mr. Golden, please.
Did I say it right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Golden, I guess I look at this change as just making it clear that one looks at illness as also mental health issues. So that's what my question goes to is that if the policies of the trustees failed to include days that included mental health needs, you know, under the term of illness, my question is, doesn't the term illness include physical and mental illness?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I think I would like to interpret it that way, but I don't think that's necessarily the interpretation that a school board would be obligated to have absent the change made by this bill. I think that does provide clarity that mental health needs are a category in their own and hopefully leaves less room for confusion.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor?
Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop. So as far as when we're talking about mental health needs, that's rather broad. And the reason I say that's rather broad is because, well, mental health needs can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. And if school districts start putting definitions on, well, you got to bring in a doctor's note from a mental health provider, then you're basically saying the only way that a parent can use this excused absence is if they're paying a therapist. And there's all sorts of different forms of therapy, and there's no one size fits all for mental health needs, and a lot of mental health needs, as we saw maybe a few years ago, a gal that was an Olympic athlete that walked away because of her mental health needs, and she didn't compete. So being as that means a lot of things different people, while I may be in support of this, I'm kind of concerned that if schools start putting really rigid definitions on that, that's going to leave out a lot of the mental health needs of a lot of students, because basically the only way a parent can then help their child with their mental health is to have them with a therapist, which isn't always the best thing in certain scenarios. So could you speak to that?
Yeah, please. Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up, and let me clarify what I intended by that. And I agree that it's vague, and I advocate keeping it vague for exactly the reasons you speak to, which is that it can encompass a lot of different things in the same way that illness would. So just to clarify, there's a difference. Not all absences right now in school districts that would relate to, if we're just looking at the illness piece and considering a potential similar policy, not all absences are required to bring in a doctor's note. And this would be a similar thing. Where a doctor's note could come into play, and again, this would be completely at the local level and how they define that and what their requirements are, is if the student was at their max, that's where the school district might come back to the family and say, look, we don't have any actual documentation of these absences, and can you help us? And that might give us the ability to work with you on the fact that your child's at this maxed place with it. That's when that documentation might be requested. And again, I'm maintaining the local control for the policies around that. I'm not advocating for a requirement of a note from a therapist in this bill any different than the way that the school district might identify their policy in relationship to illness right now. That was where I made that distinction, is that that if a student was at their max number, the district may ask for some other documentation for something. But it would not, I have worked in the attendance offices of schools, and parents call and say, this is why the kid's out today. It gets marked. It's considered excused at that point when they say that in this case, if they just say it's in regards to mental health, it would only be under other circumstances defined by the district that they would come back. And I am trying to not create a requirement or make it more specific here in order to maintain that local control.
Thank you.
Anybody else got questions? Seeing none, we'll let you close.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, especially. I recognize that I stand between you and corned beef and cabbage. So in honor of Mary Hayes, my great-great-grandmother, who came from Ireland, I'm going to say I urge you to pass, and in doing so, beyond just the luck, we will be joining a minimum of 12 other states and counting that are working actively on this policy. I know that there are some that are considering this now. I will give, it seems so fitting as I brought in the Irish piece of it, but to the bill drafter in this room who shall not be named, for the simplicity of this and other policies and other states that that I looked at, they were far more complicated and with many more changes. So I appreciate the simplicity of this, and I hope that you do too. Thanks so much.
Thank you. So Representative Bishop, do you have a...
I do. Senator McClafferty has agreed to carry this.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay, that will end the hearing on, House Bill 334. Okay, folks, I was hoping to do a little executive action, if we could hang around a little bit. Do you need some time? We had some others, but I don't remember how many.
47 and 51,
but
32.
No, I mean bills. Don't we have a bill or two somewhere? I know we've got one that I'd like to get out of here sooner or later. 117. it was Beatty's from like a month and a half ago. So. No, it was Beatty's, I think. Oh, no, 117 is. What was Beatty's? 171. No, oh, that's fine. Oh, we're in recess till 5 o'clock. Okay, we're going to come back into order, so to speak, and we'll do some executive action. And I'm in your way. Okay.
I would move House Bill 117. Do pass.
Okay, this is gender revised working retiree law under TRS. Representative Bertolio. And we heard that just a couple of days ago. And Pat, we had two questions. We talked about the superintendents. Are they back in that bill?
Yeah. I
want to make sure.
They are.
Mr. Chairman, yes, they
okay,
are.
Okay, and class one is out. You must, if you're a class one district, you can't qualify. Those are the two questions.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, there were no changes to the class distinction on
what you.
Mr. Graham termed the emergency hire section.
Okay. Let's. Any discussions? Here, grab that one.
It's here somewhere.
Chairman?
Yeah. Discussion.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I remember, and I forgot about this, so I wanted to make sure that part, it was only for class two and three that
right.
It was not class one.
Class one is out.
Right, that's, right. So
we just clarified that one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention because I was trying to find the proxies. And it's 5 o'clock. I can quit.
Yeah,
stop.
Okay.
I can quit thinking. Thank you.
Any other questions? Because we went over it. You guys have any questions? Senator Emmerich, do you have any other? We've had a pretty good discussion. Okay. Well, somebody will call the question. Me.
Question.
Can we do roll call or voice vote? All in favor of moving this one House Bill 117 on to second reading, say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? And so all the proxies are aye. That was easy. What's next?
Okay. I want to list the proxies. I have Fitzpatrick, Fuller, Regeer, and Herbst are the proxies that were all aye.
Okay, next. Oh, who's doing? Let's see. Who? Oh, I guess I'll do that one. Anybody want to volunteer, or else I'll do it. But
you do.
Okay, I'll do it.
I'm doing it.
Yeah. We got to remember to do that now. I usually forget. Okay, what's next?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 171. Do pass.
Okay. Folks, this one was, it's been sitting in our folder for quite a while because it was a revenue bill and wasn't, and we were busy and late meetings, et cetera. We just didn't do it. And now we need to get this thing going, especially we're going to get real busy with all these bills that got dropped on us. So I'd like to, you know, make a decision on it. I'd like to move it out. So this revised education law related to residential treatment facilities, there's three of them, and it's the different rates and all the work that we went into get to those rates. That's about the best I can. I don't have it in my folder. It's down on my desk. So any discussion?
Question.
Question's been called without objection. All in favor of moving this on, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? If not, Russ, do you have? Or can I just say?
Yes, all four of the proxies are yes.
Okay.
Susan Weber by proxies, yes.
Two down.
Mr.
Oh, yeah, me. Because it's my own fault. I didn't get back to it.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 240.
Okay.
Pass.
Thank you. Representative Thane brought this revised outdated reference to family education savings programs laws. It had a little bit of change, I think, on a date.
A date.
Discussion.
Question.
Question's been called. All in favor of moving this on, say aye.
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 Any opposition? Okay, that will move on. Who wants to carry that one?
Senator Weber's an aye by proxy.
That's not what I'm asking.
My four proxies are aye.
Senator Emmerich will carry that one.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, because I don't need them all.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Resolution 3-1.
Okay.
Do pass.
Governor's appointees to Historical Society Board of Trustees. Does anybody need to run them down? Any questions? Discussion?
I just have a comment. And my comment is I will be voting for these, but I was disappointed that none of the historical members who are on this page came in to say, hey, nice to meet you. This is who I am. I was really disappointed in that.
Okay. Any more discussion, Senator?
I ditto that sentiment.
Okay. I get it. We worked with them, and they didn't show. So any other discussion? Question's been called. All in favor of this resolution with the, what is there, seven names, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay.
Senator Weber's aye by proxy.
My four proxies are
gotcha.
Aye. Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Resolution 47.
Confirm governor's appointees, thank you, to Montana Arts Council. I think there were five. Okay, we have an issue that we need to clear up, and I think it's the name. So there, I believe there's an amendment. So let's do the amendment first.
No, I'm not bringing an amendment.
I am. Well, she. Well, I know, but she said her name and spelled it twice, M-A-C. Capital M-A-C. So it's like, to me, that means that's her name. Why did she introduce herself that way?
Yeah, I specifically asked that question, yeah. So she respelled it.
Okay, so I tried to get it clear about if she wanted the name changed in here, and she didn't necessarily. This is, I think we need to talk with Todd before we do this bill.
We have plenty of time to do the bill, so okay. But I want an answer to that so we can, like,
I would,
Monday.
I'd feel better if we checked with
okay.
it.
Okay, I can live with that because it's not a, we got plenty of time.
Okay.
It's an easy one to do, so.
Yeah.
Okay, we will can you pull a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would
withdraw
my motion for Senate Resolution 47.
Okay, we will stick that in the packet and deal with that Monday, hopefully.
Yeah.
Explain to what, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, how do we find out for sure? No, please, Mr. McCracken.
So when this came up yet again, and this has been a conversation that's percolated unbeknownst to me for a couple of weeks.
oh, my goodness.
I reached out to Kristen, the Deputy Director of the Arts Council, and I said, we've got an amendment. Will you make sure that this is all right with Julie Mack and what she wants? And Kristen forwarded that to Julie Mack and said, take a look at the amendment. I think it is right, but can you confirm? And Julie responded simply, Julie Mack. And Kristen forwarded that and said, I think this means.
Okay, well, let's ask the question. Senator Olson, are you comfortable with that then? I am. If she replied back with that name, that's the name she wants.
Mr. Chair,
Senator?
If I may comment.
Please.
I think that it's important to make sure that we appoint the correct person to the position. And if her name is Julie Mack, and that's what she says it is, short of getting a copy of her driver's license, I think we're going to be okay with this amendment.
Okay. Thank you. Well, move it again.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would be happy to move Senate Resolution 47 to pass.
Okay. One more time. And is there an amendment?
I would just like us to wait. All right. Whatever. Okay.
A number?
Yeah, sorry. .1.2. SR47.1.2.
Got that?
That one. You're going to move the amendment? Oh, okay. I will move the amendment for Senate Resolution 47 is 001.001. Is that what it was?
Dot one.
Okay. The amendment is on. It changes the name from McAllister, I believe, to Mac, which is what she went by, what she has spelled twice, what she sent back in an email. So I believe that's what we need to put on the floor when we make it official, on the resolution. So that is the amendment. Any more discussion? Seeing none, we'll all vote. All in favor of the resolution, say aye.
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 All opposed?
The amendment.
Sorry.
The
amendment. Yep. The amendment. I'm in a hurry. You never know. I'm hungry. Okay, the amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay.
And Susan Weber, aye by proxy.
Senator Olson's a nay.
My four proxies are aye.
Okay. So now it's amended. Please move it again.
As amended, I would move Senate Resolution 47. Do pass, Mr. Chair.
Discussion. Question. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Do you want to oppose it? Senator Olson? Okay. So unanimous, I believe.
Susan Weber's aye by proxy.
So that will cover this one.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I might suggest that you reach out to Julie Mack directly and ask her if it's correct. That way, if necessary, it can be amended on the floor. Thank you.
I think any more discussion is exactly what is not supposed to be happening. So I would really like us to just let it go now.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let's do the last two.
I think I'm caught up. Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Resolution 32.
Okay. Another resolution, I believe this is, I assume Jeff Southworth. I think he was the first one. These are on two different resolutions because they got brought at two different times, but we heard them together today. So this is for Mr. Southworth. Any opposition?
Question.
Question's been called. All in favor of Resolution 32, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay.
Susan Weber's aye by proxy.
And my four proxies are aye.
Okay.
I'm hurrying, Mr. Chair.
I know. I'm just,
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Resolution 5-1 to pass. Mr. Blossom, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, and I've got his thing somewhere, and who knows where. Okay, it was Mr. Blossom, and that was the second one that we heard today, the student regent. Any questions? Discussion? Question has been called. All in favor of forwarding that one also, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Perfect.
Mr. Chair, my four proxies are aye.
And Susan Weber's aye by proxy.
Okay. Do you want to? If it's up to you guys. Is that Representative Bishop's one? I'm fine with that. If you guys are comfortable with that, I'd love to move it out.
I'm hurrying.
No, that's fine. I know. Don't get shook about
Mr.
this.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 334 do pass.
Okay. Discussion on it, folks. I think we've all heard it. Questions been called? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Good enough.
My four proxies are aye, but... R.I.
Okay, and Senator McClafferty will carry Representative Bishop's bill, I believe.
And Susan Weber is also aye by proxy.
Okay.
And yes, I will carry that.
Any other? I think we need to wait because I would like to amend the library one. So I think that is great work, folks. I know it's been a long day. We'll give you a Friday off because I've been told we will by somebody's. Okay. I think so.
It still matters. It's nice.
I know, but I'd made that decision before and I haven't scheduled anything. Now, what we did do is I've got four bills scheduled on Monday, and I was starting to schedule Wednesday, and the House people are telling me, no, we're not going to get out. We will try to get a ruling on that. We may not be able to schedule bills because they will be doing House Bill 2 on the floor, and they don't want to give up.
On Wednesday.
This is what they're telling me. So we will have to meet Friday next week, I mean, we just have to, as much as I would rather not. But we have 20-some bills.
So can we meet Friday instead of Friday next?
I don't have time to schedule. It's already Wednesday. Might shoot me, yeah. So just saying. No, we made that decision. We'll stick with it. But going forward, we're going to have to. I was trying to load up next week and get a bunch of, especially the easier ones. But we will. We have four fairly easy ones, I think, Friday. We'll see. Monday. Anyway, that's what we're looking at. Any questions? If not, we're going to adjourn.
No Friday.
No Friday.